Misbegotten by Dan Abnett. Narrated by a Border Prince. Every man casts a shadow, not his body only, but his imperfectly mingled spirit. Emerson, M2. Years later, long after the triumph of Ulanor, and the great bloodshed of the heresy, and the darkness of the fall that ended it, men forgot the hope they had once shared. It had been a fine thing, a spirit that had invested and fortified every soul, human and post-human alike. As they stepped out from terror upon the undertaking of reunion, they were torchbearers, every one of them, carrying hope like a pure flame to illuminate the worlds and stars that had become lost from view in the long shadows of old night. History knows this time as the Great Crusade, but the name was not favoured by the men who led it. The Emperor, who is now a watchful god, spoke to his sons on many occasions, affirming his desire that a better name be found. The word Crusade implied vengeance and cleansing, a scouring of worlds and a ruthless doom to all enemies. "There may be no enemies at all," Horace Lupercal had said. "Distance and strife have walled the galaxy from us, and the old high routes and shifting ways have fallen to disuse and are choked with unstirred dust. We have not passed that way in centuries. We have not been able. True, we bear our arms and strap our harness plate upon us, ready to deal soundly with enemies arising, but we should not expect them, nor treat all we meet with that potential. Wars happened, and deeds of violent compliance driven by necessity. Those are the actions history remembers from that age. But for every world or culture that resisted or denied the offer of friendship, for every Xenos race that balked and drew arms at the approach of mankind, 100 worlds rejoiced and hymned their relief to see the expeditionary fleets take high anchor in their skies. The Great Crusade, so called by those who came after, was for the most part bloodless. Though the expeditionary fleets raced out from terror like the fragments of a nail bomb, they voyaged not to destroy, but to locate the lost and scattered branches of the human species, to rebuild and relight a galactic culture that strife and old night had together put asunder. Men forget that now. They forget the hope that had carried them forward. The wound of the heresy war acts as a monstrous punctuation in the texts of history, making it impossible to recall or even believe the spirit of optimism that had prevailed in the years prior. 2 days before his death, Horace Lupercal is said to have cried out that all hope was gone. He was not foreseeing the murder that would end the Civil War. Those close to him, though there were only a few left by then, believed he was lamenting the age before Ulanor, before Davin, before Istvan and Kalth, the time of uplifted spirit and a resolve that seemed unbreakable. A glorious and inspiring template for the future that came from dreams of noble majesty, not visions of heresy. A future that had seemed possible, until it was suddenly not. A future worth dying for, and certainly worth living for. Ulanor had been marked. The green-skinned Xenos orcs, in expedition parlance, had risen to be one of the foremost real enemies of the reunion project. There was no dealing with them. Their bestial nature brooked no compliance and no negotiation. Plans had been drawn, threats assessed, and Ulanor had been identified as the site where the Xenos menace would be met and put down. The expedition fleets were rearming for deployment. Time was precious. Fleet strategists proposed a window of 8 months relative before Ulanor ceased to be a viable fight zone and the Xenos campaign would be obliged to shift strategies to a new target world. Lupercal's fleet, the 63rd, lingered in the heliopause of the Isinium system, awaiting the return of compliance missions to Kest's Sun and Village Tarn. Though eager to make shift, Horace Lupercal would not leave fleet elements behind. The 63rd had remained on station at the Yersinium Fringe for 20 months, and in that time had recorded 6 compliances, all peaceful. First Captain Abaddon had led missions to Kiskaid and Phokis, and obtained glad fealty from the cultures of both worlds. Ordinators of Kiskaid, indeed, had furnished the expedition with auxiliaries to demonstrate their willingness to support the Imperial cause. Kiskaidan jump troops, in engraved chrome armor, lodged in the troop decks of the flagship, drilling in preparation for the Xenos compliance, and learning, wide-eyed, the histories of terror that they had missed out on. Kiskaid was a human colony culture, established during the Age of Technology's stellar exodus. Though their accents and habits were strange, they had not forgotten their rites of birth and blood. Captains Targost and Sidere had brokered peace with the Fife Worlds at Orlusta. Captain Goshen had negotiated settlement with the weary and mistrustful motherland of New Hearth, generally easing their concerns with gifts of high science and assurances of staged integration. Horace Lupercal had commended Lev Goshen for his adroit and sensitive diplomacy. Lupercal himself had led an embassy to Yersinium and won the free compliance of high concerns who govern the system. He had feasted with them for 9 days, and shown no loss of enthusiasm as the performance of their oral history, which lasted for the entire feast, rolled on and ever on, sing-song. Signals had come from Kest's son. Captains Loken and Quoz reported that the culture there was long dead. The signals that had drawn the fleet's attention had been found to be automatic broadcasts of old telecommunication systems. Some viral plague, long defunct, had taken the ancient colonies during Old Night, and their beacons had been calling for help, pointlessly, for 7 centuries. Loken and Quoz had spent a month searching the empty tomb cities for signs of life, or of stasis-held survivors. Now they were en route back to the fleet. 7 cultures, 6 new friends and allies returning to the fold, and 1 lost. A fine result, to show for 20 months' work, with no loss of life, though the Mournival quietly complained for lack of martial practice.
"Tell them it will come,"
Horace had told Malagurst, his equerry.
"Ulanor awaits, and Ulanor will give them the test they seem to long for. But tell them, too, they should not wish for it. That we can bring our kin together and no blood spill is the way my father would prefer. We are sensible beings, so we have prepared ourselves for war, better than any species in the Sea of Stars. But though we are well made for battle, we always must desire it least of all possible outcomes."
Village Tarn was, then, that last of all desired outcomes. Assessed first as an outpost or a small, starveling survivor stronghold, it had proven non-compliant. Captain Sejanus, favoured of all Lupercal's commanders, had led the embassy there and met ferocious resistance from the outset. His reports back to the waiting fleet had been brief and matter-of-fact. The environment was poor, and the human enclave there well-fortified and armed with what he categorized as biomechanoid weapons. They had at first ignored and then rejected Sejanus's requests for contact. All hope of compliance had foundered when the Village Tarn enclave commenced open hostilities. Their population was small. Scans revealed only 400 people, but their mindset was smaller. Village Tarn would not submit to Imperial authority, or even Imperial contact. "They are extreme xenophobes," Sejanus had written in a communique, clearly with a heavy heart, "and refuse to deal with us. Despite their small numbers, they are formidably weaponized. They are determined to resist, and if left alone, I fear they will grow into a significant threat to stability in the zone. With regret, my lord, I request your permission to illuminate them." Horace read this missive quietly. Malagurst and the others present could see from his humour that he was disappointed, and that he empathised deeply with his friend Hester Sejanus's reluctance. Too many pockets of human survival had reacted to expedition forces with hate and fear during the course of the Great Reunion. most often the smallest and most isolated. Illumination was a last resort. Horus granted the request and sent tidings of consolation and forbearance to Sejanus. A week later, Sejanus requested that the rest of his fourth company's strength join him. His reports were now referring to the opposition as the Biomechs or the Biomech Obscenities, and rating resistance as severe. He had identified their leader as a man named Foe, and suggested, "There is no dealing here. No option for truce. Illumination must proceed to its most miserable extent, and this blight be erased."
"I'm going to Sejanus," Horus told Malagurst. "My lord," Malagurst chided softly, "Hestor has it in hand, and is reinforced. Quoz and Loken are due back from Kest's Sun in 2 days. We are ready to make shift to Ulanor." "My brave wolf Hestor struggles with this," said Horus. "It is a bloody business. The worst dealings we must contend with in this project. Worse than Xenos breed, for this is our own kind turned feral. I will support him." "Oh, don't look at me like that, Ikri. This is the last business we must undertake in this zone, and the only one that has proved bloody. I'll see it done away cleanly at Hester's side. I'll not leave a mess here in this quadrant, nor leave one of my sons to bear the bitter burden alone."
"If this is your wish, lord," Malagurst replied,
for he knew when even his artfully twisted persuasions would not work.
"It is," said Lupercal. "Besides, I have been reading."
"Reading, my lord?"
"Idly, from the old annals. I think I know who this Foe is."
Even from orbit descent, Village Tarn did not look like a place any man would wish to stay for more than a day, let alone the millennia Foe's people were believed to have sheltered there. Bone spires of rock rose like lines of fangs from miasmal lowlands and plutonic lakes that were toxic beyond any reason of local envirochemistry. Striated clouds raced across the skies, low and dense, thick with pollutants, driven by crosswinds of blast zone force. Illumination had gripped a corner of the landscape, the region of the main enclave. Uplands had been fractured by orbital weapons, and kilometers of rubble still glowed as the heat leaked out of it. The broken curtain hills lay under a vast pall of grey smoke that rose like the breath of a supervolcano hours from obliterating itself. In the scorching twilight beneath the plume, the valley was alight with thousands of snapping, winking, flashing darts of weapons fire, as the entire fourth company of the Lunar Wolves, along with mechanized support, maintained the grid to break Foe's enclave open. Hestor Sejanus, his plate scored and dented, hurried up the dirt track to the landing zone. A stormbird, its white hull grimed with atmospheric soot, was just settling on the wide mesh pads beyond the lines of empty troop carriers and landing barges. Daggers of blue flame stabbed from its vector jets as it touched down. Sejanus felt the thump of its mass transmitted through the temporary mesh decking. Sejanus was alone. There hadn't been time to pull men out of the fighting line to form an honor guard. Lupercal, with characteristically puckish glee, had chosen not to give the fourth company captain advance notice of his arrival. Sejanus strode out across the pad, steam roiling around his feet, the landing masts winking in the yellow light. The storm bird's landing jaws were opening. Horus was already on the ramp.
"My lord!"
Horus, in full warplate, stepped out and embraced his captain.
"Don't, Hestor," he said.
"My lord?"
"I know you, old friend. First an apology for the lack of due ceremony. Then some demand for censure for taking so long to crush this nest of vermin. I admit, I had both prepared."
"Forget them," said Horus. "Let's talk inside."
They crossed to the nearest modular. Inside, air scrubbers purged the atmosphere lock. The recycle pumps hosed them in decontam spray. They entered the main command module, uncoupling their warhelms.
"Let me have the room," Sejanus commanded. The officers present saluted and withdrew.
They were alone in the low-ceilinged strategy station, unmanned cogitators streaming battlefield data onto their raised glass plates.
"You came, too?" Sejanus asked, letting the question trail.
"Offer support," said Horus.
He set down his helmet, glanced around, and then smiled at the captain.
"Your reports are candid but brief, Hester. I can tell more by what you don't say than what you do, that this place plagued you."
Sejanus shrugged. His face was drawn. Horus had never seen Sejanus so freighted with stress. "I have tried to be succinct," he replied. "This place is a bane, this enemy inhuman. In the light of the glorious compliances lately achieved, I felt I should spare the bold horror of it.
When this is done, it is a thing better forgotten. The truth is what the truth is, Hester. I'm not a sensitive soul that needs to be coddled. Even in our worst moments, we may learn things that we may benefit from in later evaluation. You've maintained a full battle record.
Of course. We could have reviewed it together at some later date. Lord, this war is all but won. My spearhead squads are just hours from taking the Enclave Heart.
How many have you lost, Hester?
Sejanus paused.
16 men dead, he said.
Another 30 wounded to such extent that augmetic repair will be required. Usually limb loss.
I am ashamed of these loss statistics. Because you are a full company of the Imperium's finest legion, and you face just 400 souls.
Yes, Lord.
Those people must be something indeed. That's an unprecedented proportional hit rate.
It is, said Sejanus. Which is why I have kept it to myself in a... But those people are not people. 400 life signs is misleading. I believe there are less than 30 actual humans present on this world. Perhaps none at all. Our systems interpreted multiple and blended life readings and came up with a figure of 400. But each one could mean a dozen, a thousand.
A dozen or a thousand what?
Sejanus crossed to one of the primary cogitators, entered his code and pulled a pick capture from combat archives. Sliding with his fingertip, he began to lay the images out across the glass screen, as a man might spread paper pictures on a table.
Wait, what am I looking at? Asked Horus. What is this?
He touched the screen. A yellow rune highlighted one image and enlarged it, bringing it to the fore. A blur, motion stabilized. Steel teeth, like human incisors, arranged in a grinding circle like the head of a mining rock drill. A snout of cream body armor. Massive jaw muscles, exteriorized, reinforced with hydraulic baffles, sheathed in the folds of a throat that belied like a serpent. Biomech, replied Sejanus. Biomechanical constructs, engineered to kill. Some as small as a man's hand, others larger than a dropship.
Engineered?
Gene edited, spliced, reworked from human stock. Horus pulled more images to the front and stared at them. Each one showed a new horror, as if he were flicking through a picked book of a madman's nightmares.
Everything you see is human, said Sejanus. There's barely anything I recognize as remotely human, said Horus quietly.
Quite. But bioscans are precise. Everything coming at us is genetically human, woven from this colony's original human stock. Some combine the genes of more than one source individual. Multiple others are worked from a single original gene donor. All are reinforced and weaponized with cybernetics.
Hence the misleading life scans.
Sejanus nodded. We're facing thousands of individual biomech hostiles, potentially over 100,000. Every single one of them is capable of killing a fully armed legionary, but they are all derived from the same 400 human originals. He looked at Horus.
My wolves have given them names, Lord. I have tried to discourage it. Cyber-zerkers, biom-cannibals, misbegots. They are feral horrors. The least of them make the greenskins seem mild. The worst is, there is no sane reason for any of them.
Sane reason?
I mean, Lord, in the sense of design. They are just like nightmares. Nightmares of flesh made flesh. Some are so clumsy and grotesque they seem to serve no other purpose than to disgust. Sejanus summoned up more images. A pallid thing like a starfish. The limbs, human arms. A beaked mouth at the centre. A thorned snake as thick as a tree trunk, formed from translucent intestine. Something made entirely of weeping eyes. Here, four thick human legs, bearing a sack that opened in a gaping orifice that was a mouth within a mouth within a mouth. Glistening things, covered in blisters and horns. Pulsing things, festooned with barbs. Things made of interlocked hands that cupped drooling mouths and glaring pupils. Things sheathed in fingernail horn. Their exposed flanks strippled with coarse black hairs and open sores. "These are the constructs foe has made," said Sejanus. Horace glanced at him.
"In the Dark Age," he said, "before old night fell, there was a man called Foe, Basilio Foe, a bioengineer, a self-proclaimed worker of obscenity. The data is very incomplete."
"It would be," remarked Sejanus. "The age of technology ended 5 millennia past." Horace nodded.
"The creature called Foe, mentioned in the annals, was a monster, even by the standards of that godless age. Hunted for his blasphemous work, he fled Terra during the Stellar Exodus. He was presumed lost, long dead."
He looked at Sejanus.
"But given his gifts and skill set, it may be he has survived. Endured is perhaps a better word. Sejanus, we may have found the hidden bastion of one of history's foulest creatures."
The vox system chimed. Sejanus turned and took the signal, listening carefully. He looked back at Lupercal.
"Illumination complete," he said. "We have compliance. Derek Terminator Squad reports penetration of the Enclave's main bunker and the capture of Foe. They're bringing him here. No other humans found. Not whole ones."
Horace nodded and clapped Sejanus on the arm.
"Your bleak efforts are rewarded, Hester."
Sejanus allowed himself a thin smile. "I think it was you that turned the tide, Lord. Word of your unexpected arrival quickly spread. The Fourth was inspired by your presence. They redoubled their efforts so as not to disappoint you."
"A coincidence, I'm sure," replied Horace. "Since when did the Fourth ever slacken?"
"Perhaps," said Sejanus. "But you have an effect. The enemy must have learned of your arrival, too, through Vox Intercept. Their heart was lost to learn a Primarch was upon them, just as our efforts renewed. Derek reports the biomech misbegots lost a degree of frenzy. Their resistance broke, as if they were, at last, afraid of us."
"They faltered just as I arrived?" asked Horace.
"As fast as word spread," said Sejanus. Horace paused. He picked up his war helm.
"Hester?"
"My lord."
"Get your weapon," he growled. "They were waiting for me."
Sejanus began to reply, but his words were lost. The entire west side of the command module ripped out, and hell poured in at them. The Misbegot was the size of 3 landing ships. It had bored up through the rock and soil beneath the Lunar Wolves' forward base, breaching the crust of the world as easily as an ocean creature might rise up from the unlit depths and break the surface. Endless rows of grinding teeth that gnawed the ground away, great loops and ridges of muscle that pulsed to heave the giant thing along its burrow. It had no form, yet it had all forms. It was a vast bulk, a slab of flesh reinforced with a ribcage that would have made the frame of a generous dwelling hall. Yet it was also a writhing forest of limbs, of clawing hands, of amputee stumps that wedged and stabilized its weight. It was eyes, wide and weeping, clustered like egg sacs. It was mouths, some opening in its center mass, some lunging forward on whip-spined necks, every gullet specialized and distinct, one to snap, one to bite, one to grind, one to sever, one to grasp and hold as others fed. It had no symmetry whatsoever. It was a sample of organic nightmares and anatomical shocks fused in one flesh, resembling no creature, terrestrial or Xenos. Yet its one defining horror was that it, and every disparate part of it, was unmistakably human. And it was fast. Despite its size, it groped and slithered like a charging grox. It demolished the module chamber, shredding reinforced fabric in a blizzard of splinters, rending cogitator stations into scatters of sparks and debris, ripping up deck plates and undermatting like paper. Staggered backwards by the shockwave of its burst assault, Lupercal and Sejanus braced side by side, unslung their weapons and unleashed streams of bolter fire into this onrushing misbegot. Wounds stifled the face of it, exploding fibres of flesh and muscle, erupting clouds of blood drizzle. Each gaping injury would have been the kill wound for any beast of comparable scale. It did not flinch. Even with the most curious Xenos form, there was always some defining sense of biology, a common sense estimation of vital parts of head or heart, or principal organs. The misbegot's lack of symmetry made such determinations impossible.
"With me," said Horus.
They fell back through a junction hall into the adjoining module, reloading as they ran. Alarms were already screeching, triggered by seismic tremblers, perimeter ore specs and integrity monitors. The klaxons were drowned out by the grinding roar of the horror as it pulverized the modular compartments to get at them. Ahead, Horus saw men rallying to meet the attack, the startled fleet officers who manned the forward base, army auxiliaries, tactical staff, and a few lunar wolves charged with station defense.
"Legionis Astartes at my side," Horus yelled. "The rest, fall back."
Only the armored would stand a chance. The rest would die in seconds. Some were already spluttering as the corrosive air of Village Tarn flooded their compromised habitat. Yet they hesitated, for it was Lupercal, death opening its door at his heels, and they had pledged their lives and come to the stars to stand at his side.
"I command it! Save yourselves now!" Horus cried.
They obeyed, reluctant. The Lunar Wolves, six of them, made a line with Horus and the fourth's captain. The misbegot bore down, half submerged in the ground, sliding through flooring and rock alike, humped spine visible, flinging deck plates aside in its wake. The walls perished. The gale entered. Eight bolters began to fire, spattering meat and swirling the air with blood smoke. It reached them, unstoppable, unslowed. Some buried, forward part of it tore up through the decking and dragged a lunar wolf down, churning tooth drills, shredding his legs and lower torso.
"My lord!"
Sejanus howled. The misbegot reared up, its titanic form supported by straining appendages and its gnarled, trans-skeletal frame. Horus stood his ground. His warblade gleamed in his armored fist.
"Go back to hell," he whispered.
"You slew it?" asked Foe.
Horus sat down facing him in the stark cell-block chamber. He was drenched in blood, and the chest and foreguards of his plate were gouged and stripped back to bare metal. He made no answer at first. Blood dripped off him onto the deck. A trail of little blood pools led back to the hatch.
"It was reluctant to die," said Horus. "I dismantled your work until I found the one part it could not persist without."
Foe nodded. He was small and bird-like, his forehead broad, his eyes bright. He perched rather than sat, hunched in his simple black robes.
"You were waiting for me," said Horus.
Foe shrugged.
"I knew you would come one day, and when you did, I would not win. I resolved to make my stand count for something. If not defeat the enemy, then eliminate the greatest of its party, its leader."
"You knew I would come?" asked Horus.
Foe nodded.
You are something like you. One day, eventually. It's been a long time, but it was inevitable. Terror endures.
You left there a long time ago.
My art was not appreciated.
I have seen it firsthand. That does not surprise me. Abominations, foe.
Abominations, foe smiled, showing small and perfect teeth. I see tastes have not changed.
He sat back.
I have been monitoring your activity since you arrived in this zone 20 months ago, he said. Through my listening stations and watch networks, I have observed your dealings with local cultures, your message, your offer of embrace. I knew you would knock on my door before long.
You were prepared, said Horus. Afraid, for you thought we would judge you as poorly as the people of Terra once did. Foe frowned.
No, you are mistaken, he replied. You think I left Terra because I was driven out, shunned, demonized. No, no, all artists and innovators are misunderstood.
Then why?
Because I saw the start of his rise, said Foe. Even then, early days, but I could see what he would become. Your father, I mean. I knew what future awaited a man who dreamed the dreams he did. Though it took decades or centuries or longer, I knew he would not be denied. I wanted no part of that. I wanted to be as far away as possible.
Why? Asked Horus.
His dream is unthinkable, yet he has the power to make it real. I see he has begun to now. You have reached the stars.
Yes, bearing his message, his hope to...
Hope?
Foe shook his head sadly.
Yes, naturally he would tell his children that. He always made things sound so optimistic. A glorious and endless future. But of course, you wouldn't understand.
I don't, said Horus, rising. You are a maker of abominations, a creator of the most obscene things I have ever beheld. I presume a mind as transgressive as yours would see only horror in the splendor of his ambition, and fear the justice he would mete upon you for your crimes against the human form.
No, God, no,
cried Foe in surprise. He hesitated. Do they still speak of God on Terra?
Do they still believe? I suppose not. They wouldn't have to now. Anyway, you're wrong. I don't fear his justice. You say I have made abominations. Look what he has made.
What do you mean? Asked Horus.
I mean you. You and beings like you. You think I've made monsters. In my wildest deliriums, I could not have designed monsters like you. I practice simple and ingenious arts of genetics and anatomy. I tinker and edit. To make puzzles and delights and curious wonders. Things to make us think and ponder the nature of our being and our place in the scheme of life.
He looked up at Horus.
I do not make things that will burn the galaxy down. I do not make things that will doom our species and lead it into an endless frenzy of war. You are the most abominable thing I have ever seen. Grotesque, sickening, misbegotten. I could not hope to kill you all, but to abort just one before it reached potential, well, that would have been some solace.
Foe got up and brushed down his clothes.
I'd like to die now, he said. I don't want to live in a cosmos where things like you are loose.
What will you do? Asked Hester Sejanus.
We'll purge this place. Let nothing of Foe's work remain. And quickly, Hester, the fleet awaits.
Will you execute him, as he asks? Horus shook his head.
For his crimes against the species, I should, I suppose, he replied. But I will place him on a ship and bring him to meet our father. Foe is mad, but I dearly wish he could glimpse the honest and whole truth once before his life ends.
You want his compliance?
His ideas are so wrong, Hester. This is an enlightened age, and we are the messengers of hope. A hope that our kind has lacked through all the ages past until this era. I want this man to know his error and appreciate the truth. It's the least I can do for him.
You are too merciful, said Sejanus.
If that is my only flaw, I'm glad of it, said Horus. His notions unsettled me. How could any man misunderstand the glory of our enterprise so completely? How could any man fear the likes of me?
Years later, long after the triumph of Ulanor, and the great bloodshed of the heresy, and the darkness of the fall that ended it, men forgot the hope they had once shared. On ancient Terra, in those final days of the fall, Basilio Foe heard the thunder approaching through the stout walls of his oubliette cell in the depths of the Imperial Palace. And, despite the madness that had by then consumed him, he knew he had been right all along not to submit to hope.
That was bloody brilliant. Again, I love that. You know what I like about all these sort of Primarchy stories that are set before the heresy and everything? It gives them the opportunity to just go full sci-fi and really delve into, like, just sci-fi shit, you know what I mean? In a way that you can't really in a lot of stuff, you know, coming across ancient human civilizations that have got all warped and twisted and all this sort of stuff. I mean, that's a great story. So this Foe guy's like a monster on Terra during the you know, at the height of human decadence. And he flees there because he sees the Emperor rise and he's like, eh, I'm getting out of here. And he flees on a colony ship. And by the looks of it, gradually, like, took out all of the colonists, or they were followers, I don't know. But gradually just took all their genetic material and turned them into monstrosities. Like, really disgusting ones. The one I didn't like there one is it said it had toenail shielding. Like, toenail. You imagine that? It would be disgusting. True abominations. Yeah, great story. Great story. I'm looking forward to more of that. We really need sort of that sort of crusade into the stars. Hardcore Star Trek. That's what we want. Hardcore Great Crusade Star Trek level stuff. That's what I want. Okay, thank you everybody for watching. Please do remember to like the video and subscribe if you're not subscribed. Let me know in the comments what you thought. It all helps the channel. And hit the bell as well so you get notified occasionally. Anyway, it doesn't seem to work very much, but you get notified when I do stuff sometimes. Yeah, everybody supporting the channel, thank you all very, very much. I really appreciate that. It really helps. You can see all your names here. If you would like to join this roll call of honour, you can follow the links in the description below and either become a YouTube channel member, a Patreon supporter, or I am now on Subscribestar because people asked. So yeah, I will be back again with more stuff very, very soon. Have a good weekend. Have a good week whenever you happen to be listening to this. I don't know why I'm saying that. I'll see you again next time. Cheers. Bye.